You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY, Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM, and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. What is success? What does it mean to be successful? Is it all about money? Or is it all about love, fame, attention? Or is it some secret other thing that we've yet to explore? I'm Brianna Wheeler, and I want to know what success means to the people that I think are successful. Because success can mean so many different things to so many different people. So let's discover a few new ways together. This is Success Stories. Hello, and welcome to Success Stories, a 30-minute radio program and accompanying podcast featuring Portlanders who have found success in unique and inspiring ways and have shifted Portland's economic, creative, and cultural landscape in the process. Thank you for joining me today, Heidi Duckler, the founder of Heidi Duckler Dance, and a trailblazer in the field of site-specific dance, an award winner, an icon of the genre. Heidi, thank you so much for joining me today. I am thrilled to have you.
Oh, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about your history with dance first. When does Heidi become a dancer? How did that happen?
Well, farther back than I can remember, I guess, because I probably started dancing when I was two, and we all are born dancing, aren't we, Brianna?
I think so.
Right? Wiggling out of the womb.
Right? Movement is part of the experience.
That's right. That's right. But I had many different dance experiences in my childhood. I think my mom put me into some kind of a program that a community center where we were with all kinds of neurodivergent kids and learning how to move bodies in different ways. And I do remember one exercise where the teacher kind of sewed us together with thread, and then she came around and physically with invisible thread, of course, and sewed our bodies, and then we were supposed to react to this invisible thread that she pulled. And I don't know why I remember that so vividly, but it must have really affected me in terms of how we move together in imaginative and imaginary ways.
Yes, and how powerful is that for a child to experience that kind of that group thinky kind of hive mind movement when you really lock in with a group?
Yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah.
So when you found Heidi Duckler Dance, do you do it by yourself or do you do it with a company? Which came first, like the idea for the company or the company? And I ask that because you bring up the idea of like these children moving together in synchronicity. Was that like a thread that leads you to founding the company?
Well, that was a thread and everyone moved differently. And I think that's an important part too, that we all move in our own unique and original ways, and maybe not even knowing that at first. But so I think, moving and moving in peculiar ways came first. And then the idea that this could be a company came second.
Right.
Because most companies are formed because they're moving together in sort of a uniformity. And this company that I created is based on how we all move individually, yet we can move, we can move sort of in support of each other,
right,
as a company,
right?
But that there's a definitely original ways that we all, unique ways that we all move,
right? Like a harmony can be created in all of these.
Yes, that's a beautiful way of putting it. Of course,
we've had we talked about movement in film before, and you turned me on to you actually turned me on to site specific works. Period. I wasn't, like, I didn't know about that before. And learning about you, I learned that you are a trailblazer in that field. But so for the uninitiated listener, explain, please, what site-specific dance is.
Okay. So for me, site-specific dance is that we respond to what's around us. We respond to our environment. We have an awareness and a responsiveness to each other and to where we are and to who we are. And then that responsiveness can take so many different forms, right? Because it can take a fictional form. It can take a literal form. It can take it can grow into so many different things. But it really is an awareness and a responsiveness to place and to people and to ourselves.
Do you see this manifesting more in the wild out of doors, or more in, like we had talked about, like activating spaces also, spaces that might not typically be, thought of as dance performance spaces. Is there one that you lean towards more than the other?
It can be in very non-traditional spaces. I mean, that's the most fun, right? But it can be in spaces that are familiar to you. You can create movement in your bed, in your bathtub, in your kitchen, wherever you are, the better. But because it's nice to sort of take the known and then sort of mine it for all of the unknowns that might that you might find there.
Right. Interesting. Does that speak to your process when you're creating, organizing, choreographing works? What does that process look like for you?
Everything that we create and that we make is made on site. Mm-hmm. So we don't transpose, we don't go into a studio and make something and then say, let's try this, somewhere else. Doesn't work.
Right.
It has to be created on site. That's the foremost, most important thing. Mm-hmm. And then when we create it there, we find things, we make discoveries. Sometimes we have a plan. Oftentimes we have a plan, but we're open to the plan kind of not working or working differently. That's okay. Because it does, like I say, it is based on awareness. Mm-hmm. And experimentation and openness,
right,
to trying things. And you need to be flexible.
Figuratively and literally.
Uh-huh, that's right.
When you look at your career, do you feel like a trailblazer? Like, do you see that when you look back on your career span?
Well, I don't know about labels, but yes, in a way,
very diplomatic.
It's so important to feel that you can be open and try things new that are new, mm-hmm, and not be afraid. It's fun to be courageous, and it's also to take risk is sort of is something that oftentimes people are not allowed to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, it's nice that you are in a place and in a space where you are given permission to take risk, to show your courage, to try things, and maybe they don't work. Maybe I'm going to climb that fence up backwards, and then I go, wasn't such a good idea after all,
Is this literal? Was this a literal risk that you took for dance? Please tell me.
And then I think, I'll try something else. And that's part of the process.
Right. Yeah. What other I mean, if you could, are there like big moments in this career that were like, wow, we look back, that was a risk. Are there any moments like that, that really, really stand out?
Well, yeah. And think, you know what, also, I was just thinking that things build upon each other, you know, right. You try one thing and then it leads to something else. Right. And then, maybe we can do this because we did this. And then maybe let's go there, you know? So like, for instance, we did this piece in Portland called Ragnarok. And did you see it, Brianna? And it was like in 2014. And it was this, we had this site, and the site was sort of full of graffiti and concrete, and it was a raw, abandoned site. And when I thought about it, I thought, oh, it's kind of like an archaeological dig or something. And so I thought about this Norse myth called Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. And I thought, let's just go with this thing. And then as we started to kind of create out there, and I thought, let me just take a run over to Goodwill. And, you know, and then we found all these things that were furry and, you know, seemed like you might wear them in a cave. Who knows? What are other things that were pajamas that you might wear when you were a little kid, like onesies. And they had like little cartoon characters. And we thought, well, if you take these characters, they might be iconic of some other story, mm-hmm. you know, that maybe you didn't know about if you were just found them in a dig, sure. you know, right? And so we had these funny costumes, and then we were thinking about lighting it, but there wasn't any power. And then we thought about fire, right? So we asked, we went to the fire department, said, can we build some fires in trash cans? Would that be okay? And they said, yeah, we'll give you a permit for that. So we put fires in trash cans. And then I thought, maybe we can project some fires on the walls. Wow. Like that could be cool. And then as the thing started to grow in scale, I thought, what if we put the audience in the middle? And then I called this like a Lazy Susan. So you wow. remember old Lazy Susan? Sure. So you put the audience in the middle and the action kind of went all the way around. But all the audience had to do was slowly turn around, uh-huh. you know, get the 360 view of all the things that would be happening in this narrative. So one thing kind of led to another and led to another to sort of tell this myth in a way that I don't think anybody really told it this way before.
Right.
That I know of.
That was a magnificent unpacking of how impactful the concept of site-specific dance can be.
Right.
So the way that you're describing the space, you're really painting this picture really beautifully. There's this idea of modern dance, contemporary dance is very stuffy, and we go and we sit in the studio, and it is what it is, and we are meant to understand it in this way. But what you're describing is crazy. It is not what one would expect from, like, the idea of contemporary dance. Wild. This feeds into the question about process. Do you find, you walk into a site and say, I feel a dance moment happening here. I see it. I conceive it. And then do you have a team of people around you that are like, yes, and here is the next step and the next step and the next step? Like, how does that process unpack?
Yeah, it just kind of, you start thinking about what could happen here and what, and some of those things work out and some don't, you know, and sometimes then you kind of create this, well, and here's an old word for you, a Rolodex.
Ooh, throwback.
you know, of these things that, these ideas that, you know, maybe it didn't quite work this time, but maybe that idea might work another time.
Love that. Right? I love that, yeah. So you always have things to build on. You're like building the repertoire as you go. It's a...
Exactly.
Yeah, like a whole ecosystem.
Exactly. And that's where experience really matters, I think, too.
Right.
You know, it's a sort of funny seesaw of being open and bright and all those things and aware, but also having this sort of file of experience that you can draw upon. that matters, you know, as much.
Right.
That you can say, oh, remember, you know, we had this idea that we never used that might be relevant in, you know, in this situation.
Totally. Talk about your, how you studied dance, because you now are educating in this really, it feels like a mind expanding way to look at dance and experience dance. But mm-hmm. when you were learning, what was your education like? Was it as strict as I'm imagining these dance educations to be?
Yeah, it was. It was strict. I mean, yes, I took ballet and then I studied dance as a young adult. I studied dance. I went to Reed College and there was a small dance program there. Now it's an incredible dance program today, but we had visiting teachers, and one was Armgard von Bartleben. I'll never forget her name. Yes. And she danced. She was almost, I don't know, over 6 feet tall, and she danced with Martha Graham. Wow. And she was very strict. And she said, one of the first things she said was, and she had very heavy German accent, which I can't, you know, I can't make that. But anyway, she said, I lock the door and you cannot be late. And I don't care if the cat dies.
Oh my gosh.
You cannot be late. And if you are late, do not come. And so it so happened that my cat was run over.
Oh my gosh. Oh
and
no.
I was late to class and during the 6 week period, and I was crying and I said, but my cat died.
She told you.
Don't you remember?
She told you.
I couldn't believe it. It's like life and art, you know? And it was sort of a lesson that I learned that they do, I don't know, they intersect. And that was more what I was learning about, was how they come together in that way. But I also did learn a lot of Graham.
Oh, that leads me to my next question. How do you balance life? Because when you work, when your passion is your work, is your life, is your, I kind of like, I relate to that as a writer, as a journalist, that the lines can get so blurry between what my personal life is and what my career life is, because those, I can't uncross right. those streams. How do you balance the two? How do you find balance?
I don't know. You know, people talk about that balance a lot. It is very important. But for me, I find it easily because I'm always finding in my life the inspiration for my art. So, you know, it's really necessary that that I live both in mm-hmm. both worlds all the time. And now that I'm older and I have grandchildren, I find such inspiration from them, and everything they say is so wonderful, and everything that they do is so inspiring, and it's so beautiful. It takes a minute to think about it and how you can, put a cap on that bottle. But
right. Lightning in a bottle, right?
Uh-huh, yeah. But it's, I think that everything, life and art, they both matter, you know, and they are both can be quite connected.
Right.
Yeah.
When I saw you light up talking about your grandchildren, what kind of, I can only imagine the magic that is happening in these dance classes when you are working with children. What, talk about the effect of a dance class on a child's life. What changes do you see?
It's so incredible, you know, because, you know, mostly the schooling that children receive is, you know, how do they manage their emotions, which is so important, mm-hmm. and how do they structure, you know, their lives. And, you know, it's such a big world and, you know, it's complicated, and they do need to learn how to, you know, how to care for themselves and for others, and how to organize things. And this is mostly the focus, right? Mm-hmm. But when they take a dance class, and then, or the kind of class that we teach, at least, they're able to, you know, freely express themselves without such, you know, such editing, and they can really, you know, find those things that are uniquely come from them, mm-hmm. and then they can learn to sort of funnel those things and cherish those things and bring joy into the room without any judgment, and that's rare. You know, that's really rare.
Right. I see shades of like somatic therapy here, mm-hmm. learning to channel emotions, yeah. work through emotions, and how much of that is physical, but we don't really talk about how much of it until you go to therapy and your therapist asks you, where are you feeling this in your body?
Right. In your body. 40s. And that's right. It is in your body. Mm-hmm. And your body is so much a part of it. That is you.
Right. Yeah. It is such a gift to learn that, to process in that way at a young age, and to feel that freeness and feel your body. And experience it freely.
Yeah. And not to hold back and to let, and just to be able to accept your body and enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
We're lucky to have them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a privilege to be able to walk down. I feel lucky to be able to walk and to move my body. And I feel like I learned that joy a lot through dance and performance. And
yes. Yeah. It's so important. And it's important to experience when you're young.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
What has been, over the career span, what have you found to be the biggest roadblock to you, like, meeting the measure?
Yeah. Well, certainly, I mean, I think the biggest roadblock is sort of the bureaucracy that we encounter.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's certainly not in people, and, you know, people want to, I think most people have an artistic self that they'd like to uncover and enjoy and express. But the roadblock is really in the bureaucracy. It's in the, it's in something that's not real, you know, it's in those, right. You know, what they call rules, which I don't know who makes those rules and why they make them, and then how they get passed on, mm-hmm. and how those, what they mean, you know, when they say, oh, this is unsafe. And I'm always like, well, what does that mean?
Right.
You know, who defined that, and who stated it, and, you know, where did it come from?
Mm-hmm.
And of course we all want to be in a safe situation, but those things are different for how, you know, how we experience them.
Right.
And, so, you know, someone makes these rules and they're very bureaucratic, and then we end up having to abide by some rules we don't understand, and we don't know where they came from. And it's a real barrier.
Yeah. That it almost, I feel like it's often the, sadly, the role of the artist or the creator to be the one to challenge those rules and to get those big sweeping changes made. Like it starts at that grassroots level of like, excuse you, what does this rule mean? Explain this rule to me.
What are you really saying here?
Yeah. And what is it? What is it we're policing here? What is why can't I do my thing?
Yeah. Why are you making us afraid?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Well. It's the everlasting
question.
Trying
to make us afraid because we're really not afraid.
No, it's conversations like this make me so much less afraid. It makes it inspires me to like reinvest all of that energy into more conversations like this, more ways to inspire people to build community in cool, weird, interesting ways that like challenge the norms Because what? Yeah. Who wrote those? I feel like this wide rejection happening now, like the Great Awakening type of moment where we're all going, everyone is asking that same question. Who wrote these roles? We know the answer. So you've been in, you work in Portland also, the company is in Los Angeles. What is it about Portland? What do you like best about working in Portland?
Oh, you know, I've lived in Portland all my life. My 95-year-old mother still lives in Portland.
Go
you
on.
Know, my grandchildren live in Portland, two of them anyway, and my daughter's there and her family. And I just, you know, my husband's from Portland and his family. And there's something about Portland that's very, you know, that the nature of Portland, the you know, the trees in Portland, when you get to Portland, the air is just, it's incredible. And jumping in a puddle. You know, I love the rain.
Singing in the rain, dancing in the rain.
Yeah. You know, singing, dancing, and all that nature is so wonderful. And it's hard to describe and explain what is so special about Portland. And we have an apartment there and I walk everywhere. And something about Portland never changes, you know?
The drivers are still bad. Nobody can park.
You can
Everybody's
always
super
park.
Pale.
A quarter's worth a quarter. Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just a very authentic place.
Right. And it makes sense that you would love it because you're a very authentic person.
Oh,
kind of a match.
Visit HeidiDucklerNorthwest.org to learn more about Heidi Duckler's work. Visit BriannaWheeler.com to learn more about me. And don't forget to follow us at Success Stories PDX. I'll talk at you next week, and until then, remember, success is what we make it.